Good morning. Welcome to hour number two of Focus 580. This is our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. The producers for this program, Harriet Williams and Martha Deal, Henry Frayne is at the controls. Around the world, the production of biofuels has expanded very rapidly. The rapid expansion driven by concerns over the high price of energy, the availability of energy, the impact of fossil fuels on the global climate. At the same time, there are some people who are concerned that if we use food crops as energy sources, this could well lead to higher prices for food. This morning, in this hour of the show, we'll be talking a bit about how the production of biofuels is changing the world food situation. And our guest for the program is Joachim von Braun. He is a director general of the International Food Policy Research Institute in Washington, D.C., and has been since 2002. He guides and oversees the Institute's efforts to provide research-based sustainable solutions for ending hunger and malnutrition. Before coming to the Institute, he was director of the Center for Development Research and also professor of economics and technological change at the University of Bonn in Germany. He's here visiting the campus. He'll be giving a talk on this very subject about biofuels and the world food situation. And his talk, it's an event in the Millercom series that's taking place this afternoon at 4 o'clock in the Knight Auditorium at the Spurlock Museum on South Gregory in Urbana. And these programs are always free and open to the public. Anyone who is listening who would be interested is welcome to attend. And also here on this program, questions are welcome. The number, if you are here in Champaign-Urbana, where we are, is 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line. That would mean if it would be a long-distance call for you, use that number, and we will pay for the call, and that is 800-222-9455. So again, here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455, and toll-free, 800-222-9455. At any point here, questions are welcome. Well, Dr. von Braun, thanks very much for being with us.
Very, very pleased to be here.
Your organization puts out an overview of the world food situation. This, I think, every 2 years it comes out.
And, that's right.
And the most recent one came out last December. And perhaps there are several things maybe that we can talk about here, but one thing I know that I would like to concentrate on is this very subject that you'll be talking about later today. But as a sort of a general question, is it the case you think that there are more factors that are coming to put pressure on the world food system that are particularly going to create problems, either problems with availability or problems with price? And these are things that will particularly affect people in the developing world.
Hmm. You see, David, there are three big new factors at work here. One, of course, is the high energy price, the high oil price, which creates the opportunity for agriculture to become an energy producer, a competitive energy producer. But the biggest factor is really the new food demand, the acceleration of demand for a lot more food, processed food, milk, meat, fruits, vegetables, from citizens of the world which become richer. In China and India, but even in Africa, the high economic growth is pushing demand and for foods. And that is really the fundamental factor. The biofuel story comes on top of that. Mm-hmm. And the third factor is on the supply side. The world agriculture has reached its limits in many parts of the world, its land limits, its water limits, not yet its technology limits. But the response on the supply side, on the production side, is not coming fast enough, and that's why we have these increased prices. Mm-hmm.
Just to go back to the middle point for a moment, in a sense that's one would have to say if around the world there's growing affluence, that's a good thing. That's a sign of economic growth.
Sure, that's great.
You certainly want to do that. But then on the other hand, what happens is that people that not only the demand for food goes up, but people are starting to look for more more high quality protein sources. They're starting to eat more meat in places that where there historically have not been a big consumption of dairy products. There's starting to be a demand for those kinds of products. So that's and we can, I suppose you can't underestimate just how many people you're talking about here, and what that indeed does to a demand for higher end, what might one say, higher end agricultural products.
Yeah, you see that China has started to drink milk, not only in the cities but in urban areas, and in urban areas, but in rural areas as well. That's new, and it's expanding quickly and moving from 5 liters of milk to 15 liters of milk in a few years. Has a global impact. It's a fundamental factor why the world milk price is so high now. So, but I fully agree with your earlier statement. This is basically good, that affluence is in regions of the world and among population groups which were poor so far, and now moving into new middle class. That's a very good factor. But at the same time, the world has become more and more unequal in terms of its income distribution. Mm-hmm. So the poor are left behind while we are getting a new middle class. So what's good for some and for many is translating into high food prices, which are bad for the poor.
Mm. You said that here, layered on top of this increased demand for food, which has an effect on price, is the explosion of interest in biofuels, which is fed by concerns over price and availability of oil and the impact of fossil fuels. So many places around the world, they are starting to devote more and more cropland to production for biofuels. And it could be sugarcane. It could be beets. Here in the United States, it's corn. There are perennial grasses that people are looking at. There are all kinds of things that people are looking at. Some of them are potential food crops, and I guess some aren't. But I'm interested in having you talk some more about this particular – the relationship between that and the price of food, because it seems to be something here in the United States that we've talked about a lot, and what one hears from the agricultural sector is that, oh, that's really not going – it's not going to – food's not going to be more expensive because we're starting to develop an ethanol industry. Can you really point to an actual increase, or is this in a sense, a model, a process of modeling that you've done is a projected increase? Or can you already say, yes, interest in producing biofuels has already, we can say, and indeed it has had an impact on the price of food?
Yeah, there's absolutely no doubt that the food price has increased substantially due to the biofuel policies of the U.S. and Europe, mandating the blending of ethanol and biodiesel has led to a fast increase in the biofuel production, and it has, and that's a fundamental and very straightforward thing, has taken out food and put it into the energy sector. So if you move 50, 60, 70 million tons of grains out of, that's what happened the last few years, out of the world food equation and shifted over into the energy sector, that has an effect, and it's not too difficult to figure out what that effect is. It's about 30% of the food price increases, about one third. Mm. And the last few years, wheat prices and corn prices have more than doubled, and most recently even further, and milk prices more, so because of the points which you mentioned earlier. Also, the animal products are very much linked to these grain price increases through the feed sector. So That's very, very concrete and very specific. And the concern which results from that is not so much in our countries, in the U.S. or in Europe, but in China, for instance, biofuel production has been cut back. In South Africa, the government has decided to opt against the use of corn in ethanol production. They've essentially forbidden it. So there's a mixed story around the world. While we are expanding it here and in Europe, the developing world, more concerned about filling empty stomachs, is cutting back after some initial enthusiasm. Mm.
Well, I just want to, for anybody who tuned in here within the last few minutes, introduce again our guest for this part of Focus 580, Joachim von Braun. He's the Director General of the International Food Policy Research Institute. That's based in Washington, D.C., has been since 2002. He's an agricultural economist by his training. Before becoming the head of the Institute, he also was director of the Center for Development Research and professor of economics and technological change at the University of Bonn in Germany. And he's here visiting the campus to give a talk about this very subject, biofuels and the world food situation. That's this afternoon at 4 o'clock. So if you're interested, you can go down to the Spurlock Museum and hear him. And questions here on this program are welcome, too. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. I'm wondering to what extent the issue is that we have food crops that are being turned into fuels. Is it also the case there are places where land that was used to cultivate food crops perhaps has been turned to the cultivation of something else that wouldn't be a food crop, but can be a feedstock for ethanol. Mm-hmm. Is that something that's also happened?
Yes, that happens. And for the situation of the food markets, it really doesn't make much difference whether you grow a grass or a corn. As long as it takes land and water out of the food system, it drives up the food prices. So we really need to look for very smart technologies in order to get both. They have to be ultra smart. Example, I think it's an interesting idea to use so-called sweet sorghum, where you have the sugar in the stem and still the grain on top of the sorghum. That's a technology currently getting into the field in India. And there you don't have then the competition between food and fuel. At least you hardly have it. Or the algae-based technologies, especially algae which are based on salt water, they don't use much space. And so there are technologies which are environmentally sustainable. They are, could be competitive. and they would not undermine the food production and availability of food in the world.
Mm-hmm. How I would expect that there might be some people who would look at the demand for energy, how much fuel that we're consuming, particularly as transportation fuel. That's really where the emphasis on biofuels, I think, is, and would say that given how much we use, biofuels could never do more than put a small dent in our dependence on oil. Are there people who are saying, well, we certainly could do this, and it would indeed could be a part of the mix, and it would lessen our dependence on oil, which for some countries that's an imported item. They don't produce their own. And yet it would be such a small proportion of the energy need. One might make the argument that, well, maybe it doesn't really matter, and it would make more sense to use that as food than to turn it into something that we put in the tanks of our cars and trucks.
Yeah. You see, with current technology, it's really very small, the contribution which biofuel, ethanol, and biodiesel can make to the transport sector. Mm-hmm. At best, 2-3%. But it will contribute a bit to energy security if times get rough. But It really depends very much on the productivity and scale of that sector in the future. And there are some interesting alternatives around the corner, the so-called second-generation technologies, which may take another 10, 15 years or so, but based on cellulosic, where you could fuel a lot more cars per acre than you can with today's technology. Mm. So I think we are in a sector which is early in its development, more like the old steam engine before getting into some good trains. So it will take time. In addition, I think it's important to keep in mind that the progress also with technology can happen on the food side. So I think we need to have a strategy where we simultaneously improve on the efficiency of the energy production from agricultural resources and from waste, and at the same time improve the efficiency of our food production. Mm-hmm. We have to work on both frontiers rather than play one against the other.
Well, that does indeed, and I promise I have a couple of people I want to get to, that does indeed get to this third point that you made, that in order to meet demand, this increasing demand for food, we're going to have to find ways to increase productivity. How much do you think through various kinds of technology, how much do you think productivity could be improved? How much could the ability of the world to generate food, how much could that be increased?
Well, that's the area where we are really worried, quite frankly. If we look at the curves of increased yields per unit of land, they don't look good in the industrialized world, neither in the U.S. nor in Europe, not in China, also not in the high productivity areas of India. So moving from here to doubling food production, which we would need by about 2050, will be very, very difficult. At this stage, we do not know. I think that's what we have to admit. But we know that investments in science and technology and research, such as in this great university, will make a difference. But we have to make this investment, and that's where it currently doesn't look good. The investment in science and technology for agriculture productivity of the developed world, of the U.S., for instance, has been cut back significantly. The international engagement in agriculture research has been cut back. I think that's, that doesn't add up to a sound policy, that just at the time when the world needs more food produced in sustained ways and more energy, wants more energy from agriculture, Europe and the U.S. are not following through with investments just where it's most necessary. So that's why we, I think, will be in a squeeze for quite a number of years until yields can catch up again. Mm.
We have some callers to talk with. Let's do that. We'll start with someone listening in Champaign and on our line number one. Hello.
Hello. Mm-hmm. I think you've just covered some of my questions, but I'll just say a few things and then listen to the response. I think we need to think about how some of our policies are maybe discouraging voluntary participation in conservation programs. That's certainly true here, and that's going to be more true because you know, land prices are going up, taxes are going up, development is reaching out. And so I really would like to know what he would have to say about that. And also, I was wondering, as far as increased food costs, that's not affecting us very much, but, you know, maybe we could know what, in fact, how much more does a box of cornflakes cost because of this research? And I think, you know, it's not going to be very much. And then think ethanol maybe only decreases the use of petroleum by about 10%. So, you know, I don't know exactly how how far ahead we're getting quickly. And then you've touched on the international situation, and certainly I think we know that militarily the U.S. can't do it alone, but we are still a real power, and we can lead the rest of the developed world if we want to go in that direction. And I'm wondering if we don't need to try to lead ourselves and other Western countries a little bit more forward in a worldwide effort to make good food available and conservation practices appealing to landowners and, just things along those lines. If you would address those, I would appreciate it. Thank you.
All right. Well, we'll see what we can do.
Well, land prices are increasing rapidly when agricultural prices go up. And so people who own land have a great benefit from what's currently happening. And that land is bankable, so this brings investment into rural areas. This is certainly happening in many parts of the world. The high food prices and high agricultural prices are generally not such good news for conservation. The set aside programs which are partly for conservation in Europe and elsewhere in the world have been cut back because of the pressure to do something about food availability. So protecting parks in developing countries, protecting rainforests, is becoming more difficult. There we cannot just look through a European or U.S. lens. Let me connect that to your third point, leadership in this field. The world agriculture system really has no leadership currently. We live in a multipolar world where the demand side is driving agriculture, and the big demand drivers are India and China. The big excess supply comes from Brazil and elsewhere in Latin America. At the time when the U.S. are withdrawing from being the major corn exporter of the world, because a lot of that corn goes into the biofuel ethanol production, that will affect leadership or the potential to lead. While I see a key leadership role of the U.S. maintained, which needs to be strengthened, is in science and technology and in good environmental policies, but especially in science and technology policy.
All right. I hope that gets at the question of the caller. Just to touch again real quick on this, the issue of increased food cost, I think the caller raises the point that perhaps for us here in the United States, for and maybe not for everyone, but for a lot of people in the United States, there may have been an increase in the cost of food, but it may be something that they don't notice. Maybe they don't pay attention to. It's there, but I think the thing that I think it's important is to mention is that probably for people who are less well off, less affluent, and who are living in developing countries, this issue of food price is a much bigger issue than it is probably for many of us here in the United States.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's a very important observation, David. Whether the inflation rate goes up by 0.5% or 1% due to the food price effects here in this country or in Europe is really not very significant. But if you live in Bangladesh and you spend 50 to 60% of your dollar a day, which the majority of Bangladeshis don't have more, $1 a day. Of this, you spend between 50 and 60% on food, and if that food price doubles there, you just have to tighten your belt, which you probably don't have. It's very, very serious in the low income countries. And if you look at East Africa, for instance, the food prices in Ethiopia have gone up sharply. We live in a very diverse world, and a sense of responsibility has to also enter our agriculture-related energy policies. We lose friends if we don't pay attention to that.
Another caller here, also in Champaign. This is line number two. Hello.
Yes, hi. Mm-hmm. You've brought up a couple of points that I have a question about regarding efficiency and leadership and technology. As you know, obviously this part of this problem stems from increase in population and increased demand for resources. And I guess what I don't understand in particular with regards to the United States is why our government doesn't take a leadership role in really striving to go after technology that increases the efficiency of our of things that use fuel. Why is it we're trying to produce more fuel? Why isn't we're trying to conserve more fuel? And why aren't we trying to be kind of a world leader in this? Because as China and India come on with more of the population demanding things like automobiles, if people aren't thinking towards the kind of technology that uses less fuel and they're only thinking about developing more fuel, then this problem, particularly with regards to natural resources and conservation, is only going to increase. So I don't understand why there's not more leadership, and then also why people as a world group, and in particular people like the United States who have the economic ability to do so, don't step up and say, you know, we demand automobiles that can get 50, 60, 70, 80 miles to the gallon. I mean, the technology exists, and yet it's not being implemented, and it's being very slowly implemented. And I don't understand why there's not this leadership.
Hmm. Well, I don't know if that's within your – you feel that's within your
– As somebody who lives here since about 10 years, I don't want to comment too much on that. I think it's not unique to the United States, the leadership vacuum on this on world energy policy and on world food policy. I think the world has not yet adjusted to a new situation where it's not singular leadership anymore, either from here or in alliance with the so-called G8 countries around the world, the big industrial nations. In the field of energy, we have the oil-rich countries, which play an important role, and now we have the large consuming nations of China and India, who simultaneously are big exporters, in the case of China, of agricultural products, by the way, leading in that field in high-value products. So leadership is now a very complicated issue. It's not there should be no question that the United States is a leader in science and technology. The record is clear, and I would wish that that ability would be much more focused on the global public goods issues around sustainable agricultural production and the environmental concerns which you have mentioned.
Does that, caller, does that get at your question?
Yes, I think so.
Okay. Well, I it seems to me that Europe and the governments of Europe have done better than the United States, have made it more, perhaps more correct to say, have made it more of a priority to work on issues like energy efficiency, use of renewables, and so forth. I think, for example, the government of Germany has made it more of a priority than, say, the government of the United States has. And one wonders why it is that maybe not so much why it is that European governments have, but why the United States government has not.
Well, people have voted for that. And initially it was sort of an a more isolated type of green movement, Green Party, but all big parties have adopted environmental agendas because people wanted it. Energy dependence in Europe, for instance, in Germany, is also much, much higher than in the U.S. From dependence from imports. But I think we are we need to broaden the understanding what's going on around agriculture and energy today. The energy debate is very much focused on the transport sector. We discussed that briefly earlier in this hour. And that's probably exaggerating. If you look at the contributions of the transport sector, on the one hand, to greenhouse gas emissions, and the contributions of agriculture and forestry, cutting forests and using non-sustainable practices in agriculture, to greenhouse gas emissions, it's roughly the same level. It's often neglected that agriculture is both a part of the problem and part of the solution. And that makes it so exciting and important that we get it right with sound agricultural policies to enhance agriculture's contribution to the environmental problems and still feed the world at acceptable prices.
We're a bit past the midpoint here. Our guest is Dr. Joachim von Braun. He's Director General of the International Food Policy Research Institute in Washington, D.C. Before that, he was Director of the Center for Development Research and Professor of Economics and Technological Change at the University of Bonn in Germany. He's giving a talk on the subject Biofuels and the World Food Situation this afternoon at 4 o'clock at the Knight Auditorium in the Spurlock Museum on South Gregory in Urbana. This is an event in the MillerCom series, open to the public, free. Anybody who would like to hear from him should feel welcome to stop by and hear on the program as well. Your questions are welcome. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. Just to go back to the issue of meeting, how it is that we will meet the growing demand for food, you said that to meet projected demand, we would need to double food production by 2050. So we have about 40 years in which to accomplish this. And you also noted that perhaps we've fallen short in the resources and the energy that we devote to doing this kind of research that might well lead to that kind of productivity, increase in productivity. And I wonder why it is, do you think, that it has been, this kind of research has been underemphasized?
Yeah, the world has become complacent. We got used to low prices. Actually, not only low prices, but decreasing prices. If you look back over the last five decades, last 50 years, there is a steep trend hinting downwards of world food prices, international prices. There are two blips in there where prices went up and down within a year or two, but those were considered aberrations. Now, this is the long-term trend. Even if you go back 150 years, that trend points downward. And many experts today ask, is this really a change of trend? And we come to the conclusion, yes, it is, because of the two factors. One is the world has become more resource scarce, and two, we have become complacent and not invested enough in agriculture research that would bring up the productivities. We have instead, in Europe and in the U.S., moved the research resources related to agriculture excessively to environmental aspects, to landscape issues, which are also important, but now we are haunted by what has happened to the agricultural research and extension systems. And many of the middle-income countries and developing countries have not yet built a strong science system. Exceptions are Brazil and China. The world is lacking the knowledge to do what needs to be done now.
Mm-hmm. I would expect that if you looked at those places in the world where there was the greatest potential to increase productivity, it would be in the developing world.
That's right.
Does that, though, mean that what you're going to have to do is bring to the developing world the kind of production methods that we see here, for example, in the United States, in Europe, and that it would mean dramatic, drastic change, I suppose, in patterns of who works the land and how they work the land? It would mean a reliance on more high-tech inputs that are going to be more expensive. Would this mean a wholesale kind of restructuring of agriculture as it has been known in the developing world?
No, not necessarily. The big difference between, if you take a bird's eye view on the developing world and the U.S., for instance, the big difference is they have small farms and we have big farms. And their small farms get smaller and smaller still. The world has about 350 million farms smaller than 2 hectares. That's 85% of the world farmers living and working on such small farms, which appear ridiculously small from a U.S. perspective and for most of Europe. But these are very competitive farms, by the way. They can produce rice and milk at competitive prices if they cooperate well with each other, these small farmers, mm-hmm. cooperatives, contract farming, and so on. So the system doesn't need to change. But still, our research systems can make a big contribution to the productivity in these small farm sectors, which need to be enhanced. The seed technology is the same. Good seeds serve a big farmer and a small farmer. A lot of the new services around water management, irrigation, the fertilizer technology, the plant protection, all of this is rather scale neutral, as we call it in jargon. It doesn't matter if you're big or small. It does matter a bit, but not too much. So our knowledge, the knowledge of an internationally oriented agriculture research system in the U.S. can make a huge contribution to the current world food crisis.
We have another caller here, someone in LaSalle. We'll talk with them on our line number 4. This is the toll-free line. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I'd like to say something about the farmers, because I am a farmer and I've been one for 53 years. I've never heard anybody mention these airliners, how much fuel they burn. I read an article that a 747, when it's brand new, takes 49,000 gallons of fuel. That's more fuel than I have used since I have been farming in 53 years. And I don't think the people in the United States really appreciate the fuel they have because they don't drive like it. I mean, if you have a speed limit of 55 miles an hour, they're driving 70, 75. And from what I've heard, that anything over 65 miles an hour, you keep losing fuel economy. So I think people need to be taught how to drive and save a little fuel. And I think I think the American people are spoiled. And I wonder what you think about that. I'll hang up and listen.
All right.
Thank you.
Well, thank you for the question. You are asking somebody this question who comes from a country which has no speed limit. And people still drive speed like crazy on the German autobahns. But there's increased debate about that. But seriously, on the airline side, for a transatlantic flight, a passenger would have to spend about 40 to $50, I'm told, in order to compensate for the burning of that fossil fuel to recapture the CO2 from the atmosphere. So you would have to give a tree farmer about $50 for planting trees and using land for tree planting in order to compensate for that single flight. To me, this does actually not appear too much. It's maybe about 5 to 10% of the airline ticket. That should be done. And yes, we have to change our habits. I fully agree with your point.
Mm. Well, that I think that it is the case that here in the United States for a long, long time, there weren't many incentives to be energy efficient. And now the only incentive that we really have has to do with the increasing price of energy. So now you maybe have an incentive to buy a more fuel efficient vehicle because gasoline is expensive. And you now have the incentive perhaps to start thinking, if you haven't thought about it in the past, about insulating your house, because in the wintertime you get your bill and it's going to be very high. That seems relatively recent. And even with that increase in the cost of energy, there seem to be a lot of people who are just saying, well, I just have to pay the bill and there's nothing I can do about that.
Yeah. Price is one factor, a very important factor. But I think the education system, the media, the general attitude towards sustainable development around climate, natural resource use and agriculture, that can change pretty quickly, as we have experienced in Europe. So the price incentive needs to be supplemented by society talking to each other about these issues and changing habits, consumption habits.
The guest, let me introduce again, Joachim von Braun. He is the Director General of the International Food Policy Research Institute in Washington and is here to give a talk on the U of I campus this afternoon at 4 o'clock at the Spurlock Museum, talking about biofuels and the world food situation. Particularly, as we have talked a little bit earlier in the conversation, there is this concern that as more and more food crops are diverted to produce fuel, basically transportation fuel is where it seems to be going, there is some concern that's going to affect the availability or the price of food, and that it's something that will definitely be acute, more felt in the developing world perhaps than it is here for us in the United States, although, as we've said, we have seen increase in food costs as well, perhaps not as dramatic as some other places, and that in connection with the increased demand for food and also perhaps our failure to invest in technology that can result in greater productivity. All these things, we're expecting to put a lot of pressure on the food system in the future, the world food system in the future. And if you're, by the way, interested in reading this report that I've mentioned, or I think I mentioned back at the beginning of the show, this report, this overview of the world food situation that was put out by the International Food Policy Research Institute. It came out in December 2007, and they do one of these every 2 years. And I'm sure if you go to their website, you can read it. Let's see. We also have some other people here. Oswego is next. We'll talk with this caller on our line number 4. Hello.
Yeah, good morning. Yeah, good stuff here. I enjoy this program very, very much. Sir, you know, we have a problem in this country and I know this for a fact, farmers grow a lot more in excess and throw away. The government is paying farmers not to farm parcels of land and so forth. And, you know, we could solve a lot of problems with the fact of just opening these back up and letting the farmers farm, therefore everybody makes money in the end, don't you think?
Yes, I think I very much believe that the market has a key role to play in addressing these issues. But the market also works so well globally that through our policies, we are driving up the food price by taking a lot of food over to the energy sector in order to drive our vehicles. So people who don't have cars and have to buy their food from $1 a day or less, they will suffer. On the farmer side, I feel setting aside productive, potentially productive land today is almost sinful. It's not only non-economic, but it's and I understand most industrialized countries have stopped that. The European Union stopped it a bit belatedly in the middle of last year. Yes, let the farmer produce. We need that increased productivity now.
What would you consider a good biofuel that everybody would be close to being satisfied with enough to where we wouldn't have such a problem? Because I've seen and read dozens of different scientific studies. I just haven't put my finger on one, but I'm not a scientist, so I figure I'll sort of do it. Thank you very much.
The Brazilian sugar-based ethanol production is highly competitive and in its current locations also very sustainable. I have no concerns about that. The question is about its expansion, but what I've seen there and looked at myself in the field and around the plants, that's 30 years of experience, a lot of research around it. It's good. But for the biodiesel production, also the canola seed-based technology. I think if it's well done and not pushed too fast, the soybean biodiesel-based production can be competitive in the long run. So there is no general answer to your question, independent of the location and the actual alternatives to the biofuel production.
Just pardon me for interrupting. I just want to follow up on this issue of land that's not in production that maybe could be. If you take aside land that is farmable, but perhaps for environmental conservation reasons probably shouldn't be, is there indeed a lot of land that's good, viable, farmable land that everybody would agree on that there would be no problem with farming in, that for whatever reason is not in production now? I would think, particularly now because of the prices for corn and for other commodities, that farmers wouldn't – they'd say, well, I can't afford to be letting land sit if it could be productive for me.
Yeah. In Europe, we had set-aside programs which did put into reserve lands which were potentially productive. Environmentally not particularly special. Mm-hmm. They were set aside in order to, as the previous caller said, to reduce output and thereby maintain prices at a certain level. Mm-hmm. So it was the opposite type of policies which we need today. So I think today we really need to scrutinize the set-aside programs from an environmental perspective. That's appropriate, but some of them may not warrant an environmental seal or an ecological seal. Back into production, please.
Right. One more caller here on a cell phone, line one. Hello. Is there a caller there, line one?
Yes.
You go ahead, please.
Oh, yeah, I'm not on a cell phone, but...
Oh, sorry. Well, go ahead.
Yeah, I had some comments on the aircraft fuel consumption. Airliners with a modern jet engine, the way they're flown today, are using more fuel per passenger than four people riding in a small piston engine airplane would use. Because of the high velocity, the high speed, and the high wind loss varies with the third power, the cube of the speed. And so you're having high wind loss because these people want to get somewhere fast in the aircraft. Now, about 10 years ago, General Electric developed an engine with counter-rotating propellers. Wouldn't be as fast as a jet, would be much more efficient. And there was a concern about the high price of fuel in the mid-90s. They developed this engine, but the production was canceled because the price went down and a concern for fuel consumption was not a major item anymore.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I appreciate the comments of the caller. This is getting maybe a little outside of our area here. Maybe what that says is that in some future show we can talk about energy and air transport, and maybe we can
But we learned something here.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Well, and we're essentially at the point pretty much here where we're going to have to stop because we've come to the end of a time. We've used our time. Just as a way of summing up, what sort of idea would you like to leave with folks?
Well, we have as energy consumer number one, we have a responsibility which is global. Some of your callers pointed at the need for U.S. leadership, and I underline the need for U.S. leadership in science and technology around agriculture so that we do not contribute but get out of the dilemma of high energy prices translating into high food prices. The suffering of the hungry around the world is increased. There's absolutely no doubt about that. We cannot gloss over that. And it is partly our making because of the diversion of food into fuel. We can and we must fix that quickly. And it requires sound technology investment, and the U.S. government would be well advised also from a security perspective to scale up that investment. It makes friends, it's good for the poor, and it's pro-environment.
If you are in and around Champaign-Urbana, you'd like to hear more from our guest, Joachim von Braun. He's Director General of the International Food Policy Research Institute in Washington. He'll be talking about biofuels and the world food situation this afternoon at 4 on the U of I campus in the Spurlock Museum, in the night auditorium of Spurlock Museum. It's a Millicom event, and anybody is welcome. Also, if you're interested in more on this issue and in the activities of the Institute, the International Food Policy Research Institute, they have a website. Go to www.ifpri.org, and you can read this report that I've mentioned a couple of times here on the World Food Situation that came out in December of last year. Thank you very much for being here.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Pleasure.